right, folks. Well, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. In fact, it's episode 563. This is the Chats edition. We also have a Forums edition every week where we just talk strategy. Now, for both, I'm your host, Jim Reed, Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter. And I have the best freaking job in the world talking poker with my friends here on the podcast every Monday night at 7:30 Eastern, live on YouTube. And you can join us for free every week and win a prize just for showing up. We're going to get to that later in the show. We're also going to get to the one and only Nathan Gamble, maybe the guy with the best poker-related name that we've had on the show, certainly in recent memory. So we're going to talk to Nathan in just a moment. First, I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, located just an hour north of the Twin Cities in the beautiful state of Minnesota. And if you want to find out more about them, you can go to runaces.com. Most of what we do here is free. We're a largely volunteer-based organization, so we depend on support from our sponsors and also from our premium members who throw in their $15 a month to help us keep the lights on around here. And if you think about it, for less than 50 cents a day, you can come connect over Zoom with other fun, encouraging poker players, all trying to get better together, watching training videos together, studying together, playing together. But you can also just get a free account. Come on, sign up for free at rec.poker. All it takes is an email address and a smile, although we do insist on both. Now, they let me host the show on Mondays, but I'm only one man, and it takes a group, a gang, a wizard, a crew to make the magic happen here at Rec Poker. We call this group of wizards the Wrecking Crew. And if you want to learn more about me or the rest of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew and see a whole bunch of smiling faces over there, or you can just listen up because you're going to meet a few of them right here on the show tonight, starting with our own producing co-host, Chris Jones.
I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5b5 on Twitter or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game. And I run our monthly deep dive segment where we explore one big strategy topic per month in the area of poker.
And I'm John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MN Everywhere. And I run our Rec Poker home games, also known as the toughest home game, play money home game in the multiverse.
Hey guys, I'm Joseph Wills. I am hockey_poker in the X Twitterverse. And if you search the keywords better fish on our website, you can learn how to become a better fish at poker.
I'm Kim Kilroy. I'm PetFat or PetFat33 on the social platforms, Fergie56 in the home game. And I hold a hand history review group once a month. So put your hands in and we'll review them.
And I'm Rob Washam. You can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere. And the first and third Wednesdays of every month, we discuss the latest books on poker.
Right on. Well, thanks, gang. Listeners at home get the sense that this is a vibrant and encouraging poker learning community. We get up to a lot over here. One of my favorite things that we do is have fantastic guests like Nathan on the show here. Nathan Gamble, it took us until episode 563, but we finally got him. He's in the house. Nathan Gamble, thank you for joining us here on the Rec Poker Podcast.
Hey, Jim, I appreciate you having me on board here. I talked with you briefly before we started the show, and I'm really looking forward to this and looking forward to chatting with the king.
Yeah. So you've been in poker for a long time, man. And I don't like to put our guests in a box right off the bat. In case our audience hasn't heard of you or doesn't know what your poker story is, let's start right now and just tell me how would you define your own role in the poker world today? And then let's kind of take it back and walk our listeners through the story of how you got here.
Yeah. I think I'm one of the few people that doesn't fit in any single box that you can imagine in poker. Usually you'll have a commentator who really isn't that good at poker, or maybe you have someone that writes but is recreational. I have a couple WSOP bracelets. I have a ring, a PLO ring online, but then I also am very active in other capacities. So I've done over 500 hours of commentary, most of that for the Galifon Challenge, but also some of that for CBS with the World Series of Poker, $10,000 limit hold'em event won by John Minette. I've written, I want to say, between 10 and 15 articles for Card Player, for Card Player Lifestyle, who's owned and operated by one of your former guests, Robbie Straczynski.
Yeah.
I've done multitudes of podcasts and I absolutely love it. So I actively play every day. After this, I'm head over to Resorts World to start up the night game, showing up there about 6 o'clock to start playing 8160 mix. So I'm actively playing day in and day out, probably 4 to 5 days a week. Any chance I get for media opportunities to be on either side of the microphone, I truly love. And I mean, how I got here, Jim, is how most of y'all get out here. Slightly different, slightly younger, but the real love of the game. I started playing when I was 12 years old. I was watching my dad and his friends play around the kitchen table. You had guys sitting in the corner. They're drinking their 12 pack and you wonder how they're getting home. But it was the early 90s, so you didn't think about that too much. And they were playing the home games. This was before Moneymaker won. They're playing Chase the Spade or Baseball or Guts. And I just loved it. I really enjoyed watching the game. And then Moneymaker came around and kind of transitioned more into Hold'em. And that's when online poker was a thing. So I was playing with them at 12 years old. And then I was jumping on to Ultimate Bet at night at 12 years old and playing free money. And I can probably say I'm probably one of the few people that can say this. The very first time I had a royal flush was in spades, and it was in 7-card stud 8 or better.
Okay.
Split the pot with a royal.
What a great feeling that must have been. So, I want to dig into sort of your journey a little bit. And I know you got so many exciting things coming up. I also just want to remind our audience here, if you're watching live in YouTube here, feel free to enter some names. We need some names of famous poker players in the YouTube chat. We're going to be playing Stake Study Stack with Nathan later. So enter some famous poker players' names. And also stick around. We're going to be doing, we're going to be giving away a prize at the end of the show, like we always do, to support our fight against food insecurity. So stick around to the end of the show, and you can win a raffle prize for supporting food banks around the world. We'll get into that a little later on, but do stick around and type some names in. I want to see if we can get some fun names for Nathan for Stake Study Stack. All right, so Nathan, so you played as a young man. You cut your teeth at the kitchen table, like, you know, some of us did. And then what was the progression into sort of playing for money? You must have felt pretty skilled already at that point. And we all have those kind of shady years in our teens where we shouldn't really be playing for money, but somehow we managed to do it. To walk us a little bit through sort of like the next few years of your poker journey.
Yeah, so there's two primary points early on that really let me know that poker was something that was going to be a part of my life for a long time. The very first one was, I believe it was the second or third time I ever played. We were sitting at my uncle's house. There's about 8 people. And these are primarily people from my dad's work. So they're all in their 40s, 50s range. I'm usually the youngest. My uncle raises. I look down. I pocket queens. We're playing 25, 50 cent. I have $20. I, you know, 3-bet it. No one knows what that is at the time. Just put more money in there. Yeah. And it goes back to him and he goes all in. And as opposed to just putting the chips in, I sat back and I thought about it and just how he looked and his mannerisms, and something just said, you're beat here. And I'm 12, 13 years old, whatever it is at the time. And I fold face up and everyone starts losing their mind. And how can he fold? What are you doing? You have no idea. My uncle goes to fold. He's not trying to show his hand, but it kind of does the wibble wobble and it flops over in his pocket kings. And my dad will tell you that's when he knew that I had something other people didn't. I say the same thing. I realized at that point, it's more than the cards. There's something here inherently that these dice don't get, and I do. And then the other one, so that was a very pivotal moment for me very early on. But the other one was my dad gave me, I think it was $11 to play on Full Tilt. Rest in peace. Sorry, everyone. And they canceled the tournament. So I said, you know, I'm real young. I said, Dad, do you want this money back? It's $11. He's like, keep it, son. You'll be okay. And I was like, oh my God, I have $11 bankroll. And I ran that down to about $1.37. It was on Ultimate Bet, actually. I remember because they introduced Royal Hold'em, which was only aces through tens.
Okay.
And it was limit. So I started playing 1 cent, 2 cent, limit, Royal Hold'em. And I quickly realized that everyone else would go all in if they had a Broadway. If they flop a straight, they're going all in. Well, if you think about the game, by the end, the river has to be paired or it has to have Broadway out there. It's only aces or tens. So I would try to pile in all the money with sets and they would try to pile the money with straights. And I quickly realized what free rolling was and how I could beat them by just paying attention. And I ran that over the course of a few months, $1.37 up to about $1,600.
Wow, amazing.
And I mean, it's life changing at that point. And that's really where I started learning strategy and how to think about the game differently. And I think one job in high school. I worked at Hollister for a couple of weeks. But other than that, poker literally was how I made my way financially into the world from a very, very early age. And yeah, you alluded to it earlier. My last name is Gamble. People are all the time, it gets to be a running joke. They're like, oh, you were born for this life. And to some extent I was, it's in my blood. And it's always been a part of me from that aspect.
Now you've really ascended through the poker world. It sounds like you started with a lot of natural talent, but you've also spent time in the military. You've spent time outside the poker world specifically as a professional. So you've had to learn, you know, good study habits, discipline. You know, you've had to apply yourself, not just through your natural talent. Now, where you are now, so many years later, when you think about poker, how much of people's success do you think is tied up in their natural talent, and how much of it can be improved through study and application and discipline and using the right tools and studying well and that kind of stuff?
I would say that natural talent is huge, but it's a recognition of how to apply that natural talent. And I'll get into that in a second. That being said, anyone can improve with tools, with study, with watching videos, with ingesting content. I don't play Hold'em. I think I play No Limit Hold'em 1 to 5 times a year, but I'm still relatively sharp at it. And that's simply because I watch everything there is on PokerGo. I watch Final Tables. I had the opportunity to do commentary on it. And so it's just a natural ingestion process of watching what the best players in the world are doing. And that has made me better. So I think anyone is capable of improving either through osmosis or ingestion, or specifically through very studied tools. Now, when I say natural talent, I think is very important. So, and realizing how to recognize it. I don't like studying. That's not my style. That's why I quit playing Hold'em. That full stop, that's why I stopped. I recognize that at the time, Pot Limit Omaha was much more of a feel game. It was much more of like, how do you maneuver? How do you negotiate this world? And so I switched into that. And as soon as Pot Limit Omaha started to get more studied and more solved, I said, oh, this isn't good for me. And that's how I found myself in the mixed game world, is now I play a 15 to 20 game mix. And it's almost impossible to study to the point of excellence in every single game with that many games. You get 8 hands every 4 hours of each individual game. And it became much more of the original talent, the raw talent. Let me outthink my opponents. Let me figure out why they're doing something. Let me follow betting patterns. And it takes you back to an older variety of poker. And so I had that natural talent, but I had to recognize that my talent lays in raw feel, understanding people and psychology versus in studying, in training, in learning. And that's how I found myself in this branch of poker versus the one everyone else follows.
Okay, that's really interesting. And that makes perfect sense. We've done a lot of work in the mixed game arena over the last few years. We're definitely trying to broaden people's horizons, expand some horizons, and get people to just to try some new mixed games that they haven't tried
Absolutely.
Before. Lord knows. I mean, it's so much more fun. And like you say, the edges are closer, you know, it's not as solved. And so people can't quite master them the same way. So I think there's a lot of good reasons for people to get more involved in mixed games.
It's way more fun.
It definitely more fun. Yeah, and you can tell if you walk into a casino, a poker room, you can tell which tables are playing the mixed games because they're all drinking and laughing and having. It's the loudest table in the room in a good way. And yeah, you know, we're actually doing a podcast a month now, just focusing on a different featured mixed game strategy as part of our mixed game. We do an annual year-long mixed game player of the year race here, a compliments of John Somsky's work. And yeah, I really do think it's definitely the future of poker in a lot of ways.
I believe, if I recall correctly, this month's is No Limit Deuce to Seven single draw.
You're very up on things. John, you want to jump in? Yep. That's correct.
Correct.
Nathan did his research
earlier this month.
I listened to y'all. I as I said, I told you before the show, I listened to 08 Grinders one, Robbie Straczynski's one. I think you're going over in Robbie's. The order is five card single draw, No Limit single draw, and then next month was No Limit single draw, Deuce to Seven. And
this is amazing.
Hot Limit Omaha. That's one of the things I've always been good at, just that memory. Even if I don't think I'm listening, I'm listening.
That, you know, that's a huge help, I think, as well as a player and as a learner of many different things, I think, not just poker. But so let's talk about that a little bit then. So you've observed a lot of poker and different playing levels, different game varieties. Let's try and talk to our audience is still mostly No Limit Hold'em, but we're dragging them, kicking and screaming into the mixed games. But speaking mostly about No Limit Hold'em, when you see all these people in various tiers of the poker world playing, what are some of the differences that you see at the table between beginner players, maybe like medium, intermediate players, and then the very best players out there? And they don't have to be the same thing for each, but like something that helps that you kind of find in common with those three tiers of players.
I think your lowest level players. So I just played, when I say lowest level, that sounds bad. Recreational level.
The least experience. Yeah. No, there's no what's the word I'm looking for? Here we know where we are. We play for fun. Doesn't mean we can't be winning serious players, but we're not going to be as experienced as professionals, whether they're good players or not.
So I just played in Austin. I played at the Lodge, which is Doug Polk, Brad Owen, Andrew Niemi's room. I went down there to support the Wacky Weekend of Poker, lots of mixed games. And I played a couple of No Limit Hold'em tables, while I was waiting for a PLO seat or waiting to do commentary. And it was treated much more as a lottery, where I actually questioned at different points if people had even looked at their cards, because it was like, hey, I have $200. How can I fast? I want it all in. It was just, and there was no rhyme or reason. There was no logic behind it. It was sometimes I look at my cards and they look pretty. Sometimes I don't. And I just want to put the money in. And so I think at your lowest common denominator, it's just, I don't exactly really know what's happening, but I can put money in there and it's fun. It's enjoyable. And maybe sometimes I walk away with more money. So I think that's like your lowest level factor for enjoyment and recreational players. And then you get more into that mid-level tier when you quickly realize I can have just as much fun, but I'm going to take money home more often. And and maybe long-term I can make money here. And there's that kind of realization moment when you get your head kicked in enough times that I enjoy fun and I enjoy money. And that's going to take you more into the streets of, well, let me read some articles. When I grew up, it was articles. It was books. There wasn't all the videos. There wasn't all the YouTube and the podcast to listen to. But now, so I still recommend, I'm old school on that, reading articles, reading books. I've never subscribed to a training site in my life, but there's several that are amazing that I would absolutely recommend. But taking it more seriously from the perspective of I want to have fun, I want to enjoy myself, but I want to take home more of my paycheck at the end. And then at the very, I mean, there's many tiers within this tier system, but at the very top level, it is treating poker like a profession. Hey, I am an athlete. I need to be in shape. You know, look, find me the out of shape guy that's playing 500, 1,000, no limit. Find me the Triton High Roller winner that maybe had 20 too many beers last night. They're very, very few and far between. So they're taking care of themselves physically. They're some of the most in shape guys. Jason Kuhn pops to mind. A clear example. They talk about their mental game. Fedor Holtz, working with Elliot Roach, comes to mind. And Elliot has been working with many, many poker players for a very long time now, because there's that realization that there's something more you can draw out of you. So they're taking it from a mental game. They're taking it from a physical game. And then I read a quote just the other day where Justin Bonomo said, "What separates me is I'll play for 10 or 12 hours in a tournament. And then after it's done, I'm going to study for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to wake up and I do it again. And I do it again." And so they're just very professional with their mindset of everything matters. And this is how I make a living. And also, I don't care about outside perception. Yeah. Hey, maybe I'm taking too long in hands. Well, I need that, or it increased my bottom line. So that's what I'm going to do. So it's very focused, very driven behavior at the upper echelon.
Yeah, I think that's right. Sort of treating it as a business. That is a common refrain when I talk to people about their impressions of the most professional players out there, the best players out there. So moving into commentary, and I guess I won't restrict this to commentary, but again, as you kind of transition from being a player to being someone who's, you know, an industry professional, who's an industry insider in a way, what were some of the things, or at least one thing, that kind of surprised you about the poker world once you moved beyond just being a player on the felt?
So I would first and foremost say, and this is something that you'll hear a lot, how fortunate I feel for that. Mm. There's still that little kid in me. I still am that 12-year-old with card player magazines hanging on the wall. Yeah. And I'll run into, last time I saw Daniel Negreanu, I was at the Poker Go studio. And you know, I tap and walk by, and he looks at me, he's like, "Nathan." I was like, "Daniel." And then we just start laughing. He's like, "I don't know why I did the weird voice." I was like, "I did it because you did it." And, you know, it's just like in me, I'm like, what the hell is happening? I don't even fucking know. I mean, literally, it's a very like that 12-year-old. So having this ability to be an insider, to work and focus and build the industry, is an amazing experience. But anyway, back to your actual question. I think the thing that had been most surprised by was how giving with their time, with their resources, how caring a lot of the people who aren't the poker players, who are the commentators, who are in the media, who are running the events, who are the operators, how much they're willing to help people for the love of the game and the betterment of the industry. And what speaks volumes to this is how I got into commentary to begin with. Mm. I'd won my first bracelet. COVID happened. And I said, "Hey, like, okay, there's this WSOP online bracelet events. Sounds cool." And somehow I got the idea to do some streaming. And I just went on Twitter. You can still find it. Probably whatever, you know, COVID timeframe was. And I said, I tagged a few people. I think it was Joe Stapleton. It was Henry Kilbane. Norman Chad, David Tuckman. And I just said, "Hey, I'm thinking of doing commentary for the WSOP or live streaming for the WSOP online bracelets. Do you have any recommendations on equipment, on tips, tricks, trade, anything, any information you could give me?" Almost every single one of them reached out in DMs or in that message and gave me a piece of advice. And one of those was Henry Kilbane. He gave me advice on the camera I'm using right now. He gave me advice on microphone, internet, all this sort of stuff. And then later, when the Galfond Challenge was happening on U.S. soil, WSOP between Phil Galfond and Chance Cornith, he reached out to me and said, hey, I'm currently in Europe, but I need someone to stream the tables to me. Would you be willing to stream the tables? So I was just supposed to be a behind the scenes stream to Henry. And so I was like, yeah, absolutely. I got you. No problem. He's like, you know, if you want, you could join me for the very first one we do. And yeah, I'd have you as a guest commentator. I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And we finished for the day. And he said, we've great chemistry. You want to do this? So that's how for the next 6 months, I did the Galifong challenge. And it's just like I put out a tweet and there the industry was helpful. The industry said, let us give you our knowledge, our tips, our tricks. And then it led to that absolutely amazing experience. And now I have that the fortune whenever I can to give that back to the industry because I wouldn't be here without those people.
That's beautiful, man. And I love these stories of, you know, just doing what you love, trying to be helpful in the poker industry and, you know, people just kind of taking that and running with it. And then boom, all of a sudden you've got a role here, you know, you've got a home here in the poker world. 08 Grinder, another great example of that, you know, your buddy,
absolutely.
Kevin Mathers, we had on the show last week, just another person who's just, you know, started doing something they loved in the world of poker. And so I tell our audience, you know, please, if you love poker, get involved somehow. There's so many groups and organizations. It doesn't have to be just Rec Poker. I mean, we're the best place to get involved and it's free and we have great connections and, you know, let us be the launching point for your poker career. But it's there. It's there for you, you know, and, you know, having a good heart and putting some hard work in, you know, it's no guarantee, but sometimes that's all it takes. And, you know, I think you got to be careful what you spend your time on because it might end up being the next chapter of your life.
It is absolutely true. And the more time, the more energy, the more passion you put into it. As I said, I listened to your interview with Robbie and he said, well, how did I get to Vegas? Because I was in Vegas reporting for a while and then I wanted to go back to Vegas, but I didn't know how. So I started this mixed game festival so right. I could go and enjoy it. And now it's one of the most successful mini tours there is. And if you believe in it, if you love it, if you want to do it and it's not there, then create it and bring the people to you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So you've worn a lot of hats in the poker industry. Now you're working with Phenom Poker. Tell me a little bit. I looked into this. I checked you out. I am not a very tech savvy person, and I've kind of stayed out of this market just because of my own ignorance. But this looks really cool. So I guess, first of all, just tell us what's going on, and then we'll get into some of the details about it.
Yeah, so Phenom Poker is, we've announced as of January that we're going to be going live. We start the informational component of our website with the ambassadors that we currently have signed to date. There's 10 of them, headlined by Brian Rast. I think that's number one by far and away. Last year's inductee into the World Series of Poker Hall of Fame. I'm going to get shot for this one. 2 or 3-time 50K Poker Player Championship winner. I believe it's 3-time now. It's so prolific. It's absolutely amazing. It's hard to keep track of those stats.
Sure.
Justin Young, who is really a true firm believer of fun in poker, has Table One podcast. And amazing guests on there. Chino Ream was on. Andrew Lichtenberger was on recently. Our CEO, Matt Vallejo, was on there. I can go on and on about our ambassadors. But we started Phenom based off of kind of what I just told you of if you don't see it and you want it, then you have to start it and bring the people to you. So we saw a lack in the industry of safety, of security, and of transparency. And we're starting a company, an online poker company based around those principles. And you alluded to you're not too tech savvy. So you're right. It does have some crypto components in it, but they're utilizing those principles as opposed to being what's entirely based around. And so it's first and foremost an online platform for poker, for people to enjoy the game that they know and love in a safe and transparent environment.
Well, that's what we need. I mean, especially these days, It feels like, you know, you're coming along at just the right time with something like this, because everyone
wasn't planned.
Sure. That's right. Well, 2 months from now, we'll find out who was really running all these bots on ECR. But no, I mean, really, game security has become an issue. I think people are naturally skeptical of what happens inside a black box that they don't have any control over. And I know you're not, you know, the IT department this place as well, but it sounds like you're using the same kind of cryptocurrency technology in order to maintain, you know, transparency with transactions and to keep things up above board where everyone can kind of see how the sausage is made. So is it, tell me about like what kind of games, why would people want to come and play here? And like, what's cool about it other than this really interesting security side of things, which I really like.
So I think the Rec Poker team on the whole is going to love the games. Our goal is to start with over 30 games. So if you can say it, it's probably going to be there. Wow. We're not just saying No Limit Hold'em, Potlim Omaha. You want some drama, huh? You want drama, huh? Deuce to seven. You want super Raz Deucey. You want name it. It's probably going to be on there. And if it's not, it's very quickly in the works afterwards. So that's a huge, huge thing. And then on that same note, what type of games? Well, when we're talking about Big Huni, Chris Hunikin, as one of our ambassadors, when we're talking Joseph Chong, they play some of the largest games in the world. So one of the goals with them as our ambassadors is acquiring some of those large games. So you have the Rail Heaven from back in the day. So if you want to sit there and you want to play $50, $2, $5, you know, 4-8 mix, whatever it is you want to play, and you can rail some of the biggest games in the world, that's our goal.
That's pretty cool, man. I can't wait to see how this develops, and I'm excited for you. It sounds like just the right time for it. Chris Jones, you've got something, I think.
Yeah, Nathan, I wanted to follow up on this. I was really intrigued when I saw the post go up about this and some of the ambassadors that are involved in it. I think there's some really interesting pieces of this. I really like the idea that it's going to be player owned too, that players have a stake in this piece. And I think that's really exciting. And frankly, I'm concerned about security. Like I have I have really reduced the amount that I'm playing online based on stuff that's been going on in the last few months, because I just don't feel confident that I'm playing on the level. But can you dig a little deeper into like what would set Phenom apart from, you know, random purveyor, gray market purveyor X in terms of security? You know, I often to sort of full of transparency, I often think of crypto and cryptocurrency as it's got some interesting pieces of it, but it is actually more anonymizes people, which may be the sort of counter to what we want in terms of game security. So I'm wondering how you'll balance those as you're thinking about Phenom.
So it's very interesting on crypto on the whole, because if you think about it, it seems anonymous from the outside, but it's actually very traceable. So if, you know, I look at you and I say, okay, this is a wallet attached to your name, there's actually an entire record of where money is sent throughout time. So money is actually extremely traceable, even though people perceive it to be anonymous. Just a little bit of a side note, I listened to a very long in-depth podcast that was given on that, but kind of just an interesting note. So a couple things that we're doing that will speak to safety and security. So we're going to be utilizing Web3 wallets. So one of the issues back in the day was Full Tilt Poker did not have segregation of player funds. Obviously, we haven't seen that, thankfully, in a very long time, but there was that lack of segregation. So through Web3 wallets, players are going to be able to buy. It's USDT is the name of the coin. It's directly attached to the US dollar. So $1 equals $1. They're going to have it in this wallet. So let's say I want to play 2-5 no limit. I'm going to connect my wallet onto Phenom Poker. I'm going to put that money directly onto a table, 500 USDT. You play for an hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, however long it is. And there's a contract that's inherently written into this transaction that as soon as you X out of that table, those funds will go back into your wallet. So you don't have to request your money. You don't have to request a withdrawal. It's going to go directly back into you. So that removes the trust that you need from the site that your funds are segregated. That's, I mean, a very, very large component, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Another one is we're going to be doing very large KYC, which stands for Know Your Customer. So if you look at current sites, and I'm going to be a company man here, I'm not going to call anyone out. But if you look at current sites, then you maybe have to give some sort of driver's license photo at some point when you want to deposit or withdraw, and you maybe have to give an address. But more or less, you can sign up pretty willy-nilly for multiple accounts. You just need a couple of new email addresses, and there's not a whole lot of KYC. So if you're going to start an account with us, then you're going to need a driver's license, passport, some form of identification, as well as you're going to have multiple pictures taken. And this is going to be utilized with biometric software that ensures that it's actually you. I'm not taking a picture of your face and uploading that. So it requires the actual person to be taking actual pictures to be uploaded. So we're going to be working with companies that are already in the industry, and we have signed some of those deals already. So that's going to be biometrically done. And what it's been announced, I believe it was in the interview with our CEO, Matt Vallejo, when it was publicly announced. And this was an idea that came from our ambassadors when we were debating real names versus usernames on the site. And one of our ambassadors suggested this, and we all said, that's a great idea. So we'll have usernames like everyone's accustomed to, so that the fish can hide behind their fish emoji, the sharks can hide behind their shark emojis. However, if, God forbid, someone was found guilty of colluding, RTA, super users, any form of cheating, whatever it is, and they are proven that they have done so within the user agreement, then they agree that they will be publicly outed. Not only will they be banned from the site, they can't start another account, but they will also be publicly outed to the poker community. So if Jim Reed's out there colluding and we catch him, well, you're publicly named, you're publicly shamed, and you're publicly banned from the site. It's not, we caught 13 accounts and they stole $2,000. And so sign up for the $10 million guarantee, everyone. You know, so we're definitely trying to take security from the forefront at every turn that we take, Chris.
But that sounds like some great measures. And I completely agree with the public shaming when it comes to that sort of thing. I'm kind of famous for saying one thing that the poker world needs to do better is ostracize the assholes. Just get rid of them. You know, these bad faith actors. The poker world is big enough. Trust me, there's enough people. There's enough friendly folks that aren't going to stab you in the back that we don't actually need to keep inviting these jerks into the games and these bad actors. Don't get me started. John Somsky, you had something there, I think.
Yeah, I had a question of, and this is a little bit out of my depth, and if it's out of your depth too, it's technical crypto stuff. Stable coins are coins that do not vary in price. They are tied to some sort of fiat currency. There's been some famous ones recently that were tied to the dollar that, you know, weren't able to maintain. Luna, I think, was one of them. Why is that not an issue, or what are you doing to prevent the collapse of the stable coin that you're basing the economic funds transfer on? In other words, why is your stable coin safe?
Well, so it's not our stable coin. So first and foremost, this is not a Phenon stable coin. This is a stable coin that is available on market at any given time for the last, I believe, 10 plus years, however long crypto has been around. So if there is a collapse of the stable coin, that is far and away bigger problems than Phenom Poker personally having issues. And it would be, without getting too technical, it's basically not a possibility to happen. But let me segue a little bit off of that, because I'm not the technical person of being able to explain how the coin are attached to US dollar and why they're completely stable. I'm not going to lie, that's not my technical area of expertise, but it does lead to an interesting thought line, because we do have a token. I think that's what you thought I was referencing. That token is different. That token is not going to be used for play. You don't buy our token and cash out in our token. You can't buy or sell the token. So the Phenom token, and Jim alluded to this earlier when he mentioned players owning a portion of the site. So let's say you do $1,000 in rake for week one. I believe everyone starts at 17.5% rake back, if memory serves correctly. So you get $175 worth of token, which the initial price is baseline 50 cents. So you'd get 350 tokens. This will basically be equity within the company. So you would get paid the following week and every week thereafter on the equity of the company, the net revenue. There's a formula if you go onto phenompoker.com that you can find the exact formula. But essentially, players are able to earn this token. They cannot buy this token, and they can only sell it back to us. So the token cannot fluctuate in price, and there's betting markets on it. People will earn the token. They earn dividends off of the token weekly, and that's based off of how the site is doing, not off of their individual play. And then if they want to sell it, there's a formula for that, that they can sell it back to the company at essentially a 10x yearly revenue. So you can't buy it on the open market. You can't sell it to anyone but the company. There's no ability, if I dump 1 million tokens tomorrow, it doesn't matter, because the price is solely attached to the net revenue of the company. It doesn't matter what anyone else is doing with it. It just matters how the company is doing. So I believe that's what you were alluding to with the tokens, but the USDT is a wildly different token that is just a kind of fixture of the crypto market.
That's very cool. I knew I was not going to understand very much of that, and you did not disappoint, Nathan. That's, no, they delivered. You delivered. That's what, John's the programmer here on the group. So anything more complicated than programming your VCR, you don't want me involved in it. That's for sure. So how did you get involved with this organization, and what kind of drew you to them? And I mean, I know what drew them to you. Come on, you're a catch. Let's get honest here. But how did you get involved with this group?
So I've known the vast majority of them for a long time, playing in the mixed game community. Matt Vallejo was one of the players, the CEO, who played in the 8160 mixed game. And so he reached out to me initially as just an ambassador. I was supposed to be one of their ambassadors. I very quickly understood the crypto component. I understood the token. I understand that this was better for the community. And I understood that we need a safe and secure environment for online poker. Otherwise, I firmly believe it's going to die within the next 5 to 10 years. Really no question about it. The more we talked, the more questions I had for Matt and for the team. He understood that I understood it, and he started to understand more and more my passion and knowledge for the industry, as well as how well connected I am. I have connections that are well batting outside of my ballpark. and that's how I essentially came onto a team, was through that network, through that passion and knowledge. And so I have taken on the role as director of ambassador relations. So that means we have all these ambassadors, but how do we use them? What do people do? We're not just asking them to be a face. And this is something that I think y'all will really, really love based off of what everyone is saying, is I'm currently putting together a schedule, and we're going to be doing weekly hand history analysis. We're going to be doing some training content. We're going to be utilizing, so you have more of a one-on-one interaction with some of our ambassadors. We're going to figure out who's comfortable writing, maybe write some blogs, who's comfortable doing a podcast, doing a vlog, And we're going to be able to do more Q&As or hand history analysis. We're going to give people access to those pros and actually build and grow a community.
That's amazing, man. Well, you've set your sights high, and it sounds like you're right on track for it. And it does feel like something that the poker world's missing. So good for you for getting involved with them. It sounds like they're heading in the right direction. We've got a couple questions from the YouTube chat. First, I want to shout out a couple new friends here. 08 Grinder is great to have in the YouTube chat as well, as always. What a great guy. I had him on the show last year, and I'm looking forward to chatting to him again sometime soon. Also want to say hi to Pat65 and Brian Dowd. And not used to seeing them around here, so thanks for checking in. They're yucking it up in there. It's one of the perks of joining the YouTube chat. Come watch us live on YouTube every Monday at 7:30. They have a lot of fun in the YouTube chat over there, I will say that. So one of the questions from here, and this one I want you to take very seriously. This is from Mike. How much goat cheese is needed to keep the beard moist in this dry Vegas air?
I mean, it's funny that Mike is the one asking this question, as he's the one that has to apply it liberally every single morning. I don't even know he shows up. I don't know how he gets in the house. I don't know how he gets into the bedroom. It's very awkward, but every morning he rubs the beard down with, honestly, he should be asked how much goat cheese he used, but getting a little weird, getting a little personal, because I want to know where the key to the house is.
There you go. That's all right. Everyone has their little herbal, you know, remedies. Everyone's got their like naturopathic ways to assist the body. You know, we're all into the holistic methods here. We got another question. Who do you consider the top? This could be a few people. Who do you consider the top MTT closers in the game right now?
Oh, well, that's all right. I think let's just shout out to the most recent, I don't want to say goat up and coming, because he still has a long, long, long time to prove himself, in my opinion, Jeremy Becker.
I knew it was going to be Becker. Yeah, that's talk about closing. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. He's been, I don't even know if it's absolutely on fire. I don't know if it's pure skill. I don't know if it's something in between. But I think he's consistently proving himself. Ben Wing recently has been another, you know, crusher. Yeah. But then if you look long term, I mean, Chance Cornith, and I'll say this for the mixed game community, I don't know if there's anyone more of a closer, more prevalent that I'd rather have a piece of than Benny Glazer. Mm. He just gets it done day in and day out. When there's a series going, you best believe you're going to hear his name. And I'll just also give one last shout out in that same camp. When I think of Benny, I think of who he took. He took third on 50K PPC. And second that year was Yuri Zivileski, Brazilian crusher, and also one of the top tier nicest guys in poker you'll ever meet in your life.
Mm, okay. High praise. Nathan, before we started, you told me you didn't mind running a little long, so we're going to take a few more questions, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll run this a little long today. Another question from Brian. Thoughts on Big O World Championship?
I love it. It's one of the games that I've been playing for a very, very long time, and I think you saw by the numbers last year, the 1500 was won by Scott Abrams, very, very good friend within the 8160 community. We're all very, very happy for him to take down that bracelet. I think I took 56th on it, if I remember correctly. Big O is, it's a game, if people want to learn, if it's played correctly, it's one of the most boring games in the world, but people don't play it correctly. So it's a ton of fun and a ton of action. And I think the 10K is going to be a wild, wild, bloody affair. It's probably going to be won by Josh Arya or Sean Deeb, if it's not won by me.
All right. Well, we've got one question from Stuart Carriage in here. And I'll just tell our YouTube audience, now is your chance. We're going to wrap this up soon. We're going to move on to Stake Study Stack and closing the action and give away a prize in our fight against food insecurity here. So if you've got any more questions for the one and only Nate Gamble, throw them into the YouTube chat there. This one is from longtime premium member and friend of mine, Stuart Carriage. It says, I see on Hendon Mob, you've done well in PLO and PLO 8. Which do you prefer, and what changes do you make between the two?
PLO 8, no question about it. I think it's
that was
one
really
of the
fast.
Best.
That was a really fast answer. I completely believe you. Yeah.
I have two bracelets in it and multiple final tables. I mean, let's be honest here. They're not the same game. When you ask what adjustments, they're not even in the same wheelhouse. They're four cards, their pot limit. That's where everything else ends. And to me, it's the reason and why I love it is you have to be able to read people's mannerisms, what their betting pattern means. And they'll just give away the strength of their hand very consistently. I've given this tip for a very, very long time. I'm going to do it in public once again.
Do it.
So let's say there's, you know, heads up, three-way, four-way, it doesn't matter, however many people to a flop, and the flop's king 8-8. Everyone checks through, 99%, everyone checks through. And then the turn's a deuce or a three or any low card. So, hey, there's this low draw possible. You see the people that have the boat just bet out of fear. And it's not a bet. They always pot it. It's always just like, uh-oh, I may lose half the pot here. Pot. And so you can very consistently understand what people's betting patterns mean when you see that they're in fear of losing half of the pot or a quarter of the pot, and they feel entitled to that money. And then you start getting into their psychology, and it allows you to understand more of their strategy overall of, is it based on, I want more chips, I want more value, or I'm afraid. And so that's always one of the things when people ask me for advice of like, look for the guy that when, you know, the low draw comes in on the turn and there's a potential that they bet out of fear.
That's a good one, man. I like that a lot. We've got a question from Pat here. He asks, what do you think is your best game? And I'm going to ask also, just in case it's not 08 there, what is your favorite game?
So one and the same. Okay. And this is going to sound weird and like I'm avoiding the question, but I'm not. It's mixed games. Just across the board. So when I say that, we play 15 games. Well, the strategy for 15 games is you consistently have a B game everywhere. You don't have a D game. You don't have a C game. You may have some A games here and there, but you just avoid ever having a pitfall and just bombing off your money in a bad way. And so I love mixed games for that because it'll uncover people's weaknesses. It'll uncover their flaws and you really can't hide from it. But you also, it's very hard for one person to just dominate and crush like you would see in, say, you know, Limit Hold'em or Pot Limit Omaha, or, you know, a stud mix where it's stud high low and raz, because you have to be good against draw games and flop games and pot limit and limit, and you have to be good everywhere. So I just really appreciate mix, and that's why I think is my best game, and that's why I enjoy the most.
Amazing. Well, we're going to get close to the end of the interview here. Chris Jones is going to start leading you into Stake Study Stack. But first, I just want to shout out the YouTube chat today has been super fun here. Lots of great people in there. And in fact, there's been a lot of beard talk in the YouTube chat on this episode. So I'm going to officially thank our totally made up sponsors, the parody band The Beards, for their support today. By rejuvenating our YouTube chat. And listeners at home, this sponsor that doesn't know that they're a sponsor of ours, the parody band The Beards, is a really fun band. They have several albums. They're hilarious. You should absolutely Google The Beards right now and listen to some fun songs from awesome rocking musicians, The Beards, who may or may not be the fictional sponsor of this segment. Chris, I think it's time for Stake Study Stack. If you are ready, let's take it, brother.
I am ready. All right. So, Nathan, this is a game we call Stake Study Stack. It basically operates like I'm going to give you three names, and you're going to pick one of them who you would like to stake in any form of poker, a mixed game or hold'em or whatever, in cash or tournament, one who you'd want to study with, and one who you just want to take all their chips. Make sense?
I got it.
All right. Three names I have for you based on this interview are We've got, and I'm going to put the pressure on because one of them's in our audience, in our live audience.
I'm going to stack Grinder.
So that's Mike 08 Grinder is one. Second is Brian Rast. Third is Benny Glazer.
All right. Big study stack. All right.
It's a poser. We don't make it easy. Yeah. No. We want you thinking. We get you thinking with these.
You want to do everything to all of them. So unless this site takes off, I'm in no position to stake anyone but Grinder. But still, I think I got stake Benny Glazer. I've said many times having a piece of anything he does in the poker world would make me a very, very rich man. His talent is unparalleled. Study with Brian Rast. I think that's more than just poker. I'd like to study with him from a mentality perspective. He did the bet a long time ago with Bill Perkins and I want to say Dan Blazarian, where he had to ride a bike from LA to Vegas over the course of 5 days. I forget exactly the lengths of time, everything he won over $1 million, but the mentality for him to grind that out and the mentality that he has to have the longevity and success he does in poker, you could learn so much from that. And then, Grinder, I know he said he wants to study with me and he can study with me anytime where we're just text each other and give a call. But see, he's a working man, right? So I know that I can just take his whole house. I can take his dogs. I can take his kids. I can take his wife. And like, I can just take his whole assets. And, the other guys, they got all their money tied up in poker. So I don't know how much is liquid. So I did the working man's whole, I probably owe him lunch now.
I love it.
It definitely does feel better when you just like you take every last penny. For there's something about like really breaking an opponent that is just it's better. It's more fun than just like dusting them a little bit. You know, you really want to bring the pain when it comes to this kind of thing, I find.
Yeah. You gotta restart them with just a little bit of cardboard and ink pen.
Work his way back. All right. Well, thanks for Stake Study Stack. We are now going to close the action, as we call it. Joseph, please.
No worries. I just wanted to say for anybody watching or listening that if they want to meet you, you'll be at Resorts World this weekend for the Mixed Games Festival, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely. Robbie Straczynski has been doing this for a long time. He reached out to me, I believe. Do you have the dates offhand, Joe? I think it's the 26th or 29th is what I remember seeing.
Yeah, and I think Sunday the 25th is the pizza party, the infamous pizza party. So if you want to grab some good food, then stop by, I believe. So I'll be there. I've got some friends coming out as well.
It'll be
a great time.
Anyone that's in Vegas, come on out. Love to not only meet people, but just have a good time. This will be the first time I get to meet you, Joe. In person, and definitely look forward to it. There's tons of big names that show up throughout the course of it. Ellie is always there in support. I love showing up. Kevin Gearhart is there. Andrew Ye. There's so many good people. It's just a great time and a fun environment, and love supporting what Robbie does as he supports the mixed game community.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're listening live, you've got next week. It's going to be kicking off next weekend. If you're listening in your when this comes out on Friday morning, you've still got time. I think it's starting this weekend. So it's not too late to go hang out with Joseph and Nathan. And I'm pretty sure 08 will be over there. And a lot of those great folks that Robbie brings in. And I will say it is a super fun group. It's a super fun event. I'd encourage everyone, if you're in the Vegas area, go check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah, and Resorts World is a beautiful room. If you've never been there, it's great. It's well run. It's awesome.
All right. So here it is. It's the last segment, and then we will free you, Nathan, To go off into the rest of your opulent, what I can only assume is your home, based on your background there.
Oh, yeah,
very fancy place, extremely fancy surroundings. You've the poker world has been very good to you, Nate. I can tell.
Well, this is the mother-in-law suite back here. Yeah. Not there. This would be large. This would be way too big.
Well, it might be just the right size for a mother-in-law. Like, mother-in-laws need space. You know, like, they need room, is my understanding of how these things go. Okay, before we get either one of us in trouble, it is time to close the action. This is the speed round, so I'm going to ask a bunch of questions. The main priority is speed. So if you have to guess or hesitate or take a couple seconds, just say pass, and we will move on. Don't worry, we're going to start you off with an easy one, Nathan. Are you ready? Are you ready to get started?
Yes.
Okay.
Was that the easy one?
That was even easier than I expected. Oh my God.
He all right, guys. Good seeing you.
A great episode on the Rec Poker Podcast. No, okay, here we go. Dim the lights, as they say. What is your favorite poker hand?
Deuce, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Nice. is poker, and this is for you specifically, is poker a gamble or a skill game?
I mean, my name on Twitter is Gamble on Poker. So you got to gamble on your skill once in a while.
What's your own biggest poker pet peeve?
Mistreatment of the dealers. Yeah, bar none.
Yep. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Yes. Come on now.
Is Ace King a drawing hand?
Well, you usually muck it in mixed games because it's not worth much.
What player type are you?
Chameleon? Definitely chameleon. I've been told nice. I'm the tightest player, and I've been told I'm the loosest player at the same table within a 30-minute time period. So
that's good. You want to adjust, right? There you go. What's one thing you own that you can't do without?
So it's actually sitting right beside me. So it's probably my watch. My wife got for me for my birthday about 6 to 8 years ago. During COVID, we both stopped wearing our wedding rings. So this kind of has become what I wear instead of my wedding ring. And we got her a similar bracelet because neither of us like wedding rings so much. It's just not our thing. So this is kind of just become her symbol to me.
I love it. Yeah. We were all along for the ride. We got there together. That's a delightful, beautiful story, Nathan. Thank you. So it's only fair that we should follow it up with, is a taco a sandwich?
Especially tacos El Gordo. Come on down to Win. Delicious sandwich tacos.
Should vacations be lazy or busy?
Busy. But like what's not one planned busy, like inherently normal busy. Like find normal busy. Avenue. No. Like find pass an avenue, talk with people, find the restaurants. Don't just like plan out like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to watch a show and I'm going to do this. Like you have to talk with people and navigate it based off of their recommendations. Busy.
I love that. Like spontaneous busy. Like,
yeah, spontaneous busy. Like leave time to be busy.
I love that. Yellow light coming up. Slow down or speed up?
Speed up. Speed up real fast.
Put yourself back when you were a kid. What's your favorite childhood holiday meal?
Probably Halloween. We're going to go with candy. We're going to like just the candy that came from Halloween. And we would actually play poker with it between me and my brothers. And like, they probably cheat it. I was the youngest, so they probably cheat it.
What's one thing such that if you had it, you'd finally be truly happy?
No. All right. That's not life. No, it's just,
that's true.
That's not it's life. True. I mean,
all right.
As soon as you hit it, then you want the next thing. So you got to be happy with where you're at in life.
That's a great answer. Kind of a trick question. You saw right through me, Nathan. Yeah. You saw right through me. Good answer.
I've done this before.
Last question, and take your time with this one. The speed round is officially over. I just have one more question for you. What's one thing that the poker world needs to do differently?
I think, and this is probably not what you usually get. It's not the poker community from a player's perspective. It's the operators. It's exactly what we're trying to do. It's to care about the community again. It's to care about the players. It's to understand that if you rake this game to death, if you have bot rings running on your site that you close your eyes to, that you are going to make more money in the short term, but you're going to kill the game, you're going to kill the players, and then you're going to kill your business. So it's just have love and compassion for the poker community and to treat it fairly. I talked with, I'm not going to say the name, company man here, but I talked with a very large organization at one point about helping to train their dealers and run schools for them. And the general response I got was, well, why would we want to spend money on that? And they're so short-sighted in not being able to see that it'd make the players happier. It would make the dealers happier. It would make the dealers more money because they get better tips. And it would make them more money because they would get more hands in per hour and either speed up tournaments or get more rake during cash games. Everything was advantageous for all parties involved. And they just looked at it from the onset of, well, it's expensive to do that. Why would we want to spend the money? So it's to not be short-sighted, and it's just to have love and compassion for the industry that you're a part of.
Beautiful. I love it, man. All right. Well, folks, we're going to say goodbye to Nathan in just a moment. But if you're listening live in the YouTube chat, if you're watching along, or if you're listening at home, I would just encourage you to pull out your smartphone and Google food banks near me. And if you do that, you'll find some organizations in your area that might be able to, that might benefit from some help. You'd be surprised how many people are having trouble putting food on the table or feeding their family or their children. And you might be surprised, you know, some of those people might be your neighbor or in your community or in a part of your neighborhood that you might not expect. You don't always know who needs a little help, but it is easy to help, whether it's a few dollars from your wallet, a few non-perishable food items from your pantry, or a few hours of your time volunteering. We do like to support food banks around here. So I'd encourage everyone to just Google food banks near me and you'll find an organization that can use your support. In the meantime, if you just type the words food bank into the YouTube chat, that's going to enter you into a raffle here, and we'll give away a great prize in a little later towards the end of the show. Nathan, this has been an absolute pleasure. I've got two questions for you. First of all, what can people do to say thanks for coming on the show? Can they subscribe to something or like something or sign up for something? And also, where can people find you if they want more Nathan Gamble in their lives and they want to reach out and say hi? What's the best way to do that?
Best way is watch Dolphin Tale. there's an actor with my name, but I came first. But it's a little guy in Dolphin Tale, and I think he's also in Batman.
Gets around.
So if you Google Nathan Gamble, that's what you find. Nathan Gamble Poker. I think obviously the main project I'm working on that is my love and passion right now is Phenom Poker. That's Phenom Poker app on Twitter. If you want to just check it out, see what we're doing, give it a follow, would greatly appreciate it. Phenompoker.com. We're posting weekly blogs. We have a newsletter sign up that's available there. On all the social medias, then I'm under Gamble on Poker. Twitter is more company at this space. It's still me. I'm still there. I still respond to direct messages. Some of them get buried in the ethers. Instagram is just kind of more of my personal life. But other than signing up on the website via email and finding out what we're doing, we're coming up on launching a Discord within the coming month or two. And once that is announced, it's really about building community, and we want to get people on there, and we're going to do exactly what we talked about, Jim, of doing hand history reviews, doing Q&As, and we need people there. We need a poker community for us to support with those ambassadors and their time. And so we ask everyone to give us an opportunity and give us a chance to let us support you and to support us as we grow.
That's wonderful, man. Well, I'll make sure that those links are in the show notes as well. So folks, if you're listening along at home, just scroll over to the show notes and you can find some of those links. Joseph?
And yeah, just real quick with the Phenom Poker, are there any regional restrictions or anything with that for the listeners?
Yeah, so we are very much not going to be a gray market site. We want to operate fully in the legal capacity of every jurisdiction. So that means that within the U.S., unless there is a state that specifically says no to online poker, there is no law on the books. We've gone through the lawyers. We will be available in the vast majority of the U.S. We'll be available across the vast majority of countries within the world. And that being said, it is abiding by jurisdiction by jurisdiction. If there's a country that explicitly says you cannot do it, we won't do it there. If there is a country that says you need this gaming license, we will not be operating there until we obtain that gaming license. But we look forward to supporting the poker community as a global entity and doing so legally. And one of the things that we point to when we say this is some of our ambassadors right now, Tomate is number one in Uruguay. You have Sergio Aido, number two in Spain. And my apologies, I wasn't expecting to go through names at the minute. Fareed Jatin is number two or number one in Colombia. So we are trying to establish ambassadors that are not just US known, but are known globally so that those communities can have a voice and they can be heard and we can expand where we are legally allowed to.
Awesome. Fantastic. Some great names there too. Yeah. Okay, well, Nathan, thank you again, my friend. I look forward to crossing paths again sometime in the future. Thanks for your time, and I'm excited for all the future holds.
Absolutely, and I appreciate y'all's time. I appreciate the chance to get here and talk with y'all, and I look forward to seeing some of y'all at least at the Mixed Game Festival coming up at Resort Twirl.
All right, well, enjoy the rest of your night, and I'm already looking forward to our next conversation.
Take care, everyone.
All right, John Somsky, why don't you roll us through some recent home game results and we can see who won some fancy prizes. Before you get started, I'll pre-interrupt you and just point out that our fantastic sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, they have an event coming up March 13th to 17th is their Pot O' Gold. That's a $360 buy-in. And you know you're going to have fun over at Running Aces. So check that out, March 13th through 17th. All right, John, on the eFelt of our home game club, what's been going on recently?
Well, as Nathan mentioned, our last game was No Limit Deuce to Seven single draw, and that was won by Apple O' My Eye, Harold Berry, for his first mixed game championship of the year. This also propels him into a 30-point lead in the Player of the Year points race. Sweet. Then we have none other than Gopher Boy TJM. Taylor got his victory in the daily TOC. So he's earned another silver pin for that. God. And that is his first TOC victory for the year. Then we have Hockey Poker 702.
Oh,
who
was that? Who?
I don't know. It listed as private here.
I need to change that. I do need to change that. Thank you. I didn't know that until the post came out. Thank you.
So in case of people can't read the line between the lines, that is, of course, Joseph Wills.
Yeah.
I am actually doxing you this time, but I assume that's with your permission.
That's all right.
That is his very first victory for Rec Poker.
Congratulations, Joseph. Way to go, man.
First of many. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, sir. Wannabe. Exactly.
Ron Payton got his second nightly victory for the year.
Unstoppable Cape Poker wannabe, cannot be beat. A good and an Ontario resident, from what I understand. While we're doxing people, so just saying, we're collecting quite a few excellent recreational poker players here in the great state of Ontario.
Yeah, and his phone number is no. Now you said it. Joe got his second international victory for the year.
Way to go, Joe!
And Stewie 13, Stuart Carriage, got his first international victory for the year. And then we have Kelly S. 1962-20, Kelly Stork, won the LPP event. So she can contact info at rec.poker for her free month at Learn Pro Poker.
You love to see it. Kelly, you're already so good at poker. I'm not sure we should let her get a whole free month at Learn Pro Poker. I mean, do we want anyone to ever win any of these home games again? Or are we just going to let Kelly just win and win and win by getting better at Learn Pro Poker? I just, Kelly, send that email, please, info@rec.poker, and we'll set you up with your free month. You're going to love all the amazing learning stuff that Ryan LaPlante and the gang over at Learn Pro Poker have going for them. It's a fantastic site, and we're proud to be one of their learning partners. Yeah, John.
That brings me an idea. Maybe it would be in our interest to actually whoever goes out first in the LP. Oh. They're the ones who get the free month.
That's right. It's like the Ricky Bobby Award. We're gonna see like who
yeah.
who let's workshop that. We'll workshop that in the next planning right. meeting. I like that's good. That's good thinking, John. All right. Is anything else that anybody else wants to mention or highlight? Marek Madness is right around the corner. We're getting to the end of February, which means it's almost time for the magical month of Marek. Some call it March. We call it Marek here. Patent pending, trademark pending. Yes, John.
So I just had a question. So I know that there is a mystery guest who is in the works
yes.
of
yes.
playing. Is that public information at this point? Is that something that we can disclose?
I think as of today, we can officially disclose it. Would you like to do the honors?
I think we can. For those of you who are fans of other poker podcasts or other poker media, you might be interested to know that none other than Chicago Joey, Joe Ingram, will be playing in Marek Madness.
That's right. So
we are going to be able to, and I will have the, you'll be able to choose the brackets. Just at least somebody don't vote for Joey to win. I'm just, at least one person should have a bracket that doesn't have him as the winner. I do expect that to be an outsized favorite, and I can't blame anyone. But that is the news.
Yeah, how crazy is that? We had such a fun time with Joey on the show a few weeks ago. He said he wanted to get more involved, and Marek Madness was right around the corner. This is our annual 16-player ladder tournament that we model after March Madness. And he's in. He's going to play in it. So on Tuesdays in March, on March 5th, March 12th, March 26th, and then we're sneaking into April for April 2nd, on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern, we'll be broadcasting these heads-up matches between our Wrecking Crew members, premium members, community members, and Poppy himself. So we're going to see if the cream can rise to the top here in Marek Madness. So stay tuned. Tuesdays nights, twitch.tv/recpoker. Chris, you look like you want to chime in with something. Yeah, you're just excited about getting a ringer in here to mop the floor with these Rec Poker members?
Yeah, I mean, that's really exciting. That wasn't what I was going to chime in with, but it is very exciting.
All right. Well, huge shout out to Joey for playing along with us. Like, what a cool guy. You can tell his heart's in the right place and wants to be an agent for good in the recreational poker world. So we're so excited to have him playing along with us here in Marek Madness. Okay. Chris, why don't we do our raffle giveaway here? I see in the YouTube chat, K-Poker Wannabe, Stuart Carriage, Rob Delaney. Hey, Rob, long time no see. Hope things are well. Eric Anderson and Jay Fleming is back. So that gives me five in that order. If you see the same, then six it will be the re-roll. Is that how you like to do it, Buck?
Yeah, six will be the re-roll. Let's do another $20 for food bank.
Delightful.
When we hit a six. And while I'm rolling, everyone should check out the Poker Org article about our own Jim Reed this week, which was really fun to see.
Away we go.
Here we go. It's a five. Of course it's a five.
It's a five. Jay Fleming. Of course it's you rolling. Of course it's a five. It's a five. Congratulations, Jay Fleming. You have won a fantastic prize. Send that email, sir, to info@rec.poker. And we will get you all sorted out. Congratulations. And thank you for supporting a food bank, even if it's just by helping us talk about it for a little longer on the show here. Congratulations, Jay Fleming. And thanks for joining us on the Rec Poker Podcast. All right, gang. Well, I think we're going to wrap this baby up and roll on out of here with nothing else to add. I have to thank the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino one more time. Of course, I have to thank John Somsky, Kim Kilroy, Joseph Wills, Chris Jones. Who else is here? Rob Washam. Of course, Nathan Gamble. What a guy. Our YouTube chatters and you, the listeners at home. We wouldn't do it without you. So thanks for listening to the Rec Poker Podcast. See you next week, everybody.